budget reform to order. We're going to start as a subcommittee of the full committee in order to take testimony, public testimony, on House Bill 3624. It is April 24th, 2003. And Mr. Bercovian.
Thank you, Vice Chair. In front of you is just a for your information letter. This is a press release from Department of Human Services stating that by April 25th there will be 19,500 Oregonian adults on OHP standard that it will be losing their coverage unless they pay premiums. This is in front of you just as an FYI only.
Thank you. Any other items? Seeing none, we'll go ahead. Looks like the first two... We have a chair who's arrived. The first two folks, it looks like they've signed up together, Jim Russell and Bob Beckett. Is that correct? You guys signed up? Okay. Wonderful. Come in, sign in, please, and make sure you're close to those microphones. The acoustics in here are bad, and the microphones aren't much better.
Thank you, Chair March and members of the committee, or should I address Chair Westland? My name is Jim Russell. I'm the director for the Mid-Valley Behavioral Care Network, which is one of the mental health organizations operating Oregon Health Plan Mental Health Services, a five-county region, including this one, about 20% of the Oregon Health Plan membership.
I'm Bob Beckett. I'm the director, executive director of Jefferson Behavioral Health. We represented Coos Curry, Douglas, Jackson, Josephine, and Klamath counties.
I was just talking with one of the directors of the fully capitated health plans 5 minutes ago, and I definitely agree with his opinion that for the first time we have a legislative committee that's deeply informed about healthcare issues, healthcare policy, well qualified to lead us forward with some salvage of the Oregon Health Plan, and several members of the committee have expressed my appreciation privately, but I'd like to do that now. We had the opportunity yesterday, I heard some discussion of the bill under consideration and heard the testimony last night and thought I would just ask one question. I wanted to understand that the mental health organizations are not specifically addressed by this bill at this point.
And yeah, so that pretty close. Yeah.
So that if I were to read Section 1, Subsection 4, about everyone should enroll with a fully capitated health plan if that exists in their geographic area, if a mental health organization also exists?
Physical size. As soon as we get this through the pipeline and on its merry way, we're going to tackle something that we've all been involved in before, that pesky little issue that we call the mental health delivery system. So, no, I mean, if you're reading this that this is physical health only, that would be the correct reading. If you're reading it that this involves mental health as well, that would be incorrect.
Okay, thank you. We'd be very pleased to participate in that discussion with you again about how to craft a solution.
Well, we would be pleased to have you. As you know, we started a work group, and we danced around some very thorny issues. You know, mental health, it's a different kettle of fish. We'd be pleased to have you. And like I say, as soon as we can get through this puppy,
well,
you'll be getting a call.
Rick knows our email and phone numbers.
I would just like to add my thanks also to Mr. Russell, the work that members of this committee did on the stakeholders group, and the report that this committee issued afterwards showed to me clearly that the group not only understood the issue, listened, paid attention, worked their way through, and really understood what they were doing, and we really appreciate seeing that happen. Thanks a lot. We will definitely be here if you need us next time.
Yeah, there's a condition, Jim.
Yeah.
for Bob's participation, and that is you procure
I have to drive him.
Some. Nobody. No, we pass that at the end of the mental health work group. No, we need the Jet Ranger or the small Lear. We're not even going with the citations, okay?
All right.
I mean, we're talking convenience of transportation.
We want him here.
Yeah, so that's an implied yes.
Within limits of funds available.
It's only 240 miles each way. That's no big thing. Thank you very much.
I hear you.
Thank you, committee.
Thank you very much. Oh, is this a tandem, I guess? Lynn Marie Kreider and Mary Lou? You guys ready? Perfect. As Vice Chair March indicated, please enter, sign up, and get real friendly with those mics. Just a second. Bob, did you come all the way up here for this today?
No.
Yes.
I wish I could say yes, but this is the fourth meeting today that has been a productive trip.
Perfect. There, I was going to feel bad for 30 seconds if you did. Yeah. Excuse me. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the
committee. A lot closer to that microphone.
My name is Lynn
Marie.
You
can pull the high-tech elevation devices close to you.
The books will move.
Here. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Lynn Marie Kreider. As you know, I work for the Oregon AFL-CIO, but I am also a board member of the Oregon Health Action Campaign, and Mary Lou and I come to speak to you as such today.
I'm Mary Lou Henrich, and I am a board member of the Oregon Health Action Campaign and was formerly the CEO of Care Oregon and a public health nurse and worked for Multnomah County for many years. So I've been in the healthcare arena for a while.
Recovering CEO.
I don't know if I'll ever recover.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we at the Oregon Health Action Campaign support the intent of House Bill 3624, as we understand it, to increase the number of OHP enrollees that are in managed care, both from the standpoint of cost containment and in terms of delivering quality services to enrollees. We also support the way the bill endeavors to create more flexibility in contracting for prepaid medical services, including a package of services that may be the physician services package and not the hospital services package. In addition, we support that portion of the bill that would allow contracts for management of services by the fully capitated plans for some folks that are enrolled in fee-for-service. We wanted to speak to you at some more length with respect to Section 1 of the bill, which requires applicants to enroll in fully capitated plans where they're available in the geographical area. Again, we support that idea. We believe that problems with respect to responsiveness and quality in service sometimes get dealt with by allowing people to opt into the fee-for-service system and out of managed care. And we would prefer to see a system that tried to deal with the problems in the context of the managed care system. So we would be supportive of efforts to have OMAP work through the contracting system and through oversight systems to make sure we have responsive, fully capitated plans and we deal with problems in those plans, and that it be sort of a last resort to have people move into the fee-for-service system is a solution to problems. So I guess the model we'd like to see is that, yes, you go ahead, enroll people in the first instance in fully capitated plans where that's available. If there's no other way to deal with their needs, then move them out of that system. But not have the first step be to say, we're not going to enroll you in managed care. So rather than write a whole lot of exemptions, we would prefer to see that there be a back-end safety valve built in if we can't deal directly with the problem through oversight mechanisms.
But Lynn, would you agree there should be some exceptions to the process?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there may be some where, for reasons of, for example, I understand that currently there's some exceptions, like if you're in the third trimester of pregnancy, that you aren't you're not necessarily moved into a capitated plan when you initially enroll, but rather stay with the physician that you've got in a fee-for-service model. That makes sense. I simply suggest that there's probably a relatively small number of those, and that we shouldn't have a wide open path into the fee-for-service system at the front end.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And we've got to strike a balance here, because mm-hmm. the bill very clearly states, and we might even strengthen those portions up, in order of preference, it's managed care, PCO, mm-hmm. and then fee-for-service. I don't want to be too TOO heavy-handed, with regard to thou shall, but at the same time, I don't want to be too lax on that either. Someplace we've got to strike a balance, and I think working with the department, working with the managed care organizations, the idea is to provide the best medical care possible for that individual.
Right. Mr. Chair, we certainly agree, and we don't mean to suggest that we should just march people into one system. On the other hand, sometimes It would appear that now sometimes we're dealing with delivery problems in an indirect way rather than a direct way, and that seems unfortunate.
I think Representative Merkley was first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We had testimony from several people last week regarding the need for flexibility regarding individuals with severe disabilities or specialized medical needs. Are you comfortable with those exemptions, or are you responding to that testimony? Can you expand on?
I think that dovetails right in. But.
It does, and I think that my belief, having run a plan, what?
Good job.
With the mic. The mic. Oh, I'm good at
this. This is how you do it.
Now, all right.
Take some,
just right up. We just right talk there. Into it. Okay. I think that. Yes, there are some cases, and I think what becomes difficult is to develop a one-size-fits-all delivery system for the whole state of Oregon. I think things are different when you're as maybe a severely disabled person in a remote part of the state, and the provider capacity, really, if there were a managed care plan developed there, the provider network would be kind of fairly narrow and kind of local geographic. But this person may need specialists that are available only at CDRC, OHSU, in Portland. And that oftentimes it just doesn't work to cram the person into that managed care plan because they don't have those providers on their panel. They don't work with them all that, So there needs to be some escape valve. I think that when you're in the Portland or the Tri-County area, that the plans need to have the capacity for their clients to have access to specialists that are attached with the university in some aspects, et cetera. And so I think those things can be worked out, but I know what happens, because I've been there being a contractor, is that oftentimes in rules, when you're trying to make it for everybody all over the state, then it just doesn't always fit. And so how to do that in law, I'm sure, becomes very difficult, because you're trying to make that, so that you're treating everyone fairly, both the clients, the contractors, the state, and you've got all the lawyers and everybody else trying to make sure that you aren't giving any special deals to anybody. So sometimes I don't envy you trying to craft the law. But I think you have to struggle with just what you were saying, Chair Wesson, that you're trying to strike that balance. And that I think there are contractors, the state, and us, like as OHAC, representing consumers, that are really willing to sit and wrestle with it and try to work on what's reasonable. And I think that everybody's trying to be reasonable in this.
We don't envy you either, because you're going to be asked to help us. Look, if Russell can provide a Learjet for Beckett, the very least you can do is help us craft this exceptions language.
Yeah. Okay.
We'd be happy for that input.
The last thing that we wanted to comment on was those sections of the bill that endeavor to establish systems for setting reimbursement rates for providers of services, and we do feel that adequate reimbursement rates are necessary in order to ensure access for all enrollees. We are concerned that in the context of the co-chair's budget that would disenroll 150,000 people or 110,000 people out of the plan, that we need to beware of the risk that we sort of thicken the soup for the providers while taking the bowl away from recipients. And so there's a balance there. And since this bill only deals with the reimbursement side and not with the eligibility and benefits package side or the funding question, it's awkward. It really cannot be finally determined without looking at those other pieces. And we just felt, as representatives of people that are enrolled in the plan currently and may lose benefits, that we have to say that.
Mm-hmm. Or lose coverage altogether,
yeah. Right.
Even more than benefits.
That's
the other,
right.
You can speak about the physician part.
Yeah, the other thing we wanted...
Well, let me respond to that. I don't say this in a pejorative sense, but the revenue committee is down the hall, and that's where we discuss those issues. But this is a delivery system,
yes,
for whatever, amount of people,
yes,
populations we're able to buy back.
Mm-hmm.
So
we understand that.
And at the same time, you've got to be able to make a market out there to have the physicians, to have the access,
mm-hmm,
to give the service. So it's,
yeah,
one of these.
That's right.
And that's what we're trying to say.
Yeah. It wouldn't be okay if you put 100% in the blank next to hospital rates, 100% of Medicare rates, while cutting off, 110
or 200,000 or whatever.
150,000 people. But we understand that it's a balancing act and that both are important to the adequacy of services to people that are on the plan. The other thing we wanted to mention is it looks to us like the bill addresses reimbursement rates for the fully capitated plans and for hospitals, but does not deal with reimbursement rates to primary care providers that are delivering services in the fee-for-service system, and it seems like that's a missing element here.
I think the assumption there is that any of the PCOs would take the physician rate allocated in the per capita rate to the fully caps, but I think that's a fair comment. I think that's something we need to look at.
It just seems like that access to primary care
is what
providers
everybody wants.
Is the thing that is most lacking in the system right now, and so we probably ought to look at that piece.
And being completely forthright, we came to this PCO thing variable in the equation, a little later than we did, and we spent more time on the fully capitated methodology. I think that's a fair comment. I think it's a good one. Representative Greenlee.
Yes, I was wondering whether you were referring to Section 8 on page 4, and if so, whether you had specific comments on that section, if that is what you were referring to. It's on page 4 of the bill I have anyway. This may be a very different...
I was actually referring to the lack of anything that addressed, as far as I read it, that addresses reimbursement rates for physicians who are in fee-for-service, rather than in the capitated plans or the PCOs.
Well, what we're trying to get to in Section 8 isn't so much a rate for hospitals or physicians or fully capped. I mean, we're trying to come up with a methodology to help make the establishing of the rate more transparent. And quite frankly, I think we're going to go through a major rewrite of that section. I think there are ways to accommodate several of the different points of view and come up with absolutely the best overall perspective,
yeah,
that will also show, and I think this is critical, that will also show you know, the gap between what the cost is and what is actually being paid to health care providers in this state.
And your point, I think, is that Section 10 that talks about fee-for-service hospitals.
Yes, that was...
setting doesn't talk about physician rates
exactly
in that same way.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlee, that's right, and perhaps I wasn't aware of the intention of the committee with respect to Section 8, that it would actually encompass all providers.
Yeah, and 10 is trying to force... I'm not sure this is a good idea. It's trying to bring, you know, two different stakeholders, key elements in the provider network, hospitals and fully capped, together in a negotiation process. Okay. We might look at that section as well.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Expect to hear from us on this little issue of exceptions.
Stay tuned. Or suggest language, actually. That's the other point that we're trying to get to. We're trying to come up with the most efficient system we can within the framework, and any language that you can suggest, please submit.
Okay. Hi, Mary.
I'm going to let Vice Chair March read the following name off, since they're already starting off on the wrong foot by not following the very careful instructions. Please print your names. We are reading challenged up here.
Reverend Palmer, Carolyn, would you come up, please?
Oh. Oh, I'm so sorry. I hope that heard about somebody was talking to me.
Actually, it's very, very easy to read her name. It's the
that is better.
It's the comment above it that I think you
wrote. Read that as a name, or you know.
Oh, Special Concerns Ministries.
There we
sorry
go.
Sorry about that. On my abbreviation, I. You know, I thought you was well versed in her abbreviations.
We're happy to have you under any circumstances. Enter and sign in, please.
Well, my name is Reverend Carolyn Palmer from Special Concerns Ministries Policy Director, and also Public Policy Director, and also from Multnomah County In-Home Care Advisory Committee Legislative Representative. I have not had a lot of time to look at this, but when I received the information, the 24-hour notice was, I didn't even have that. But anyway, picked up some concerns. I want to thank you that you are working on a system to restore for some of the people that, I hope this is to restore some of the people that on the medical needy program that are no longer receiving services. Because we find great concerns, and we're unable to come up with enough prescriptions for people. Our emergency medical fund is gone. We're not able to even help them see a doctor as necessary. And many churches are in the same situation, so it's very, very difficult. And for some of the in-home care people also. As I said, I'm glad that you're doing this, but I do have some concerns. I think I take a little bit of, I wouldn't say opposite position of the last two speakers, but I'm greatly concerned about the fee-for-service clients. For an example, there's many of the people who have worked for companies who have been invested, who have a private insurance, which is a supplement to either their, if they're disabled, to their Medicare plan. And so, and those companies usually only pay about 20% of whatever Medicare pays. So really, as you know, Medicare is not paying very much. And then the 20% is not very much.
Well, this is Medicaid services only.
Right, but what I'm saying is that I want to see a pretty strong clause that's still going to allow you looking at the fee for service, where there's coupled that part of the pay is from coming from Medicare and the Medicare supplement private plans. For example, PERS. If you're invested in PERS, PERS is paying $60. If it's the ODS plan, PERS is paying $60. Of the premium, while OMAP is covering the other 114. Now, as OMAP looked at that and said, oh, that is, we're paying less for this person on the premiums than we're paying if they were in a managed care plan. And so many of the doctors, what they're getting for fee for service is less than the person that doesn't have the Medicare and the supplement plan. And how close that is to the managed care, I don't have those figures, so I can't give that. But I do know that many, many doctors have already said no more Oregon Health Plan because of part of this, the red tape. They're trying to treat a patient, and they're in a semi-crisis situation. It's difficult to get approval for things in the time frame that they need. Like some of the old-time prescriptions that they're trying to use for them is not working. They're finding some of the new ones are. And so for quality of life, for sustaining of life, they're an absolute necessity. So one of the things is concerned about, what about the prescription management of this? And how difficult is it going to be for patients in the future to have these kind of medications that's going to be necessary without delays? I know a lady the other day was very alarmed because she's on Plavix, and she was going to be delayed because she had to have the prior authorization. I said it's going to be 4 or 5 days. Well, they'd already given her the 5-day limit, but it was going to be another 5 days. So finally the pharmacy said, okay, this is not quite what we can do, but we're going to do it in your case because we don't want a risk of you having a stroke. So they give her another 5 days. But not all pharmacies feel comfortable to doing it. So I see some problems in here that I'd really like for it to see you look at in those regards. And seemed like there was something else I wanted to say.
You take your time.
Anybody want to ask me a question yet?
You know, that's awkward when you're saying, well, let's see, I'm at the dais and I got to do my, oh, I got to hurry here. Don't hurry. Take your time.
We could just hum a song back there while we're waiting.
What? Oh, no.
You take your time.
No.
Do not.
No, hurry up. Hurry up. Quick.
Well, usually it is a hurry up. So.
No, actually, we have plenty of time. We don't have a lot of people signed up, so you're in good luck, Carolyn.
Where'd you come from today?
Portland.
Dan from Portland.
Yes.
You know how important it is that you're here today? This is everything. This is what makes the process work. I mean, it's why we have these public hearings. It's why we take our time with them. I mean, you're the key to the process.
Well, thank you.
We appreciate you being here.
I'm here representing a lot of people that have a lot of concerns, like the single mom this morning. When I asked her what she thought of this, she became alarmed about the geographical aspect because she lives in, of course, there's a lot of things not really fully understood about this at this point, for myself and many others, of course. But she lives in Gresham. She has a boy that has acute asthma. It took her quite a while on the managed care plan that she's on to, and it had enough options that she kept trying to find a doctor that would really work with the boy. He's 14 now. She finally found a good doctor. The doctor's in Portland rather than in her in Gresham. And it's the Oregon Care Plan, and he's being seen at Providence. And he's had to be seen sometimes at the hospital. This doctor's finally got a handle on his asthma enough that those emergency trips to the hospital are less frequent. She doesn't want to see that change.
Let me just assure her that if she is enrolled in a managed care plan, Care Oregon, mm-hmm. and she has a primary care physician assigned to her, this bill, or to her son, mm-hmm. this bill doesn't do a thing.
Okay. Okay, now, as far as people fee for service, there's concerns of other people who already have their primary physicians that have maybe treated them for a year or two till they finally got enough handle on the multitude of different conditions that are life-threatening, that they can adequately treat this person and with the prescriptions, and some of them are new, that work so that they have some quality of life with less threat of stroke complications from diabetes, complications for asthma, or what's the other? Why can't I think of respiratory condition? I'm trying to think of
emphysema.
Thank you. So again, we have some real concerns that that safety net be built in here.
I think we were talking about that before, about the exception language.
Yes.
There needs to be exception language for those special case needs folks, and that's the previous folks also said that. So, but let me go back to your other point that you first made. So, because I was talking with Mr. Bacobian here. We're talking about what we call the expanded population. In other words, not the categorical folks that are required under Medicaid, but the expanded population of seniors, for example, who are receiving Medicare, but Medicaid under our expanded population is picking up the supplemental part of Medicare.
The
Part B. So that, and we probably need to address something in our in this, but this was primarily focused at the categorical population, this rewrite here. And our next phase, or one of our phases, will include, hopefully, the expanded population.
I thought I saw something in the co-chair's budget that would take away paying for the Part B premiums for folks. I mean, I hope that wasn't what I was really reading, but it looked like it was what I was reading.
Yes, all the expanded population is gone. And
they didn't have anything for standard or the expanded population.
Okay.
I think they bought back a few kids.
Explain what you're saying by expanded population.
Well, back last year, we changed and called it. We called the Oregon Health Plan. We had Oregon Health Plan Standard, and we had Oregon Health Plan Plus.
Right.
The plus population is the population that we are required under the Medicaid law to cover.
And that's what this bill is talking about.
In other words, they're categorically eligible. Under federal law, the Medicaid, the OHP standard population, mm-hmm. are those people that we expanded the health plan to cover, that we were trying to cover more people. So anybody who's in that standard population, which includes the seniors who we're paying the supplemental on, mm-hmm. who includes the medically needy, mm-hmm. includes adults with health problems that aren't totally, given them a total disability to where they fall into categoricals, those aren't addressed here yet.
Okay. But
we need to.
Yeah, Representative Merkel.
Thank you. And I guess I want to continue the discussion here that's being pursued. Just for my own clarification, I had read this as an underlying structure on which both a OHP standard type plan, if you will, categoricals could be placed, and an expanded population could be placed, because there's no comment that divides those. Am I misreading this, or is this the underlying structure on which all those, is it the foundation on which all those could stand?
Correct.
It is the foundation, but we have not addressed some of the little technical pieces that Carolyn has brought to us today about the expanded population.
And, for example, we have not, and this does not set out eligibility, so it doesn't clarify where that line will be drawn. It doesn't address if there are two different groups that have different premium standards or copays or things of that nature. All that would be addressed elsewhere, sitting on top of this foundation. Is that my understanding? Okay.
And I'm wondering on income standard for the people that we're talking about, too. Many of them that we're dealing with, or their income, of course, they'll qualify if there's $300 a month, but then there's many, many people who qualify. I mean, $650 a month is $605 to $650 is a lot. I know a lot of people in that range. Well, as you know, there's no way they can pay for prescriptions and try to rent a place. In fact, some of them on affordable housing even are having to choose between trying to pay for medications to sustain their their life that are not in the special categories that we're talking about, maybe only have one, they can't do it. So somehow, I'd like to see even those that have private insurance that they're able to carry over. Of course, most of those private insurances that they have are going to run out, so that'll put them in another category anyway. But they need that help right now, too, to be restored that we're on the medical needy. The medical needy, that
right,
was
getting
above
up into
the
SSI
500.
And SSDI with that 605 to 650 range.
Well, some of them weren't. There's some, for an example, I know a man with a congestive heart failure. His income is 605. Well, that's right. He is getting from this Social Security disability and trying to work part-time, too. So that's another thing. If there's going to be people with disabilities that's going to try to work and their income's still going to be above that threshold of the SSI that you've been maintaining as one threshold that you're covering people, and then where you put the limits above that, those people need that help now, too. And I hope that's part of the expanded group that you are going
it's
to...
If I might answer that, it's the part of the expanded group I'd like to cover. And it's the only way we'll get there is if we can figure out some way of paying for it. Any suggestions you'd like to make to us or the Revenue Committee or the Speaker or the President of the Senate, et cetera. We basically right now it's a question of we have barely enough money to cover the categorical group, the OHPE Plus group, and we don't have any money right now to cover those people that were in the standard population, and we need to figure out how.
Well, I guess in regards to the OH Plus, certainly want to see that you maintain that at mobility levels 10 and 11, which testified about before. A lot of people reevaluate and sort of fit in that. So I hope that it's up to that level. And I think one of either the co-chairs or the governor's budget did not cover that. So I feel that's really a must. And the other thing is that many of the people with physical problems also have the mental health problems and are required some of the mental health drugs, partly because they do have chemical imbalances in their body. It's not just psychological. So I think at the same time you'll have to allow that the both aspects in this portion that you're looking at be included for that reason. Hi.
Okay.
Don't talk to him.
I'm in trouble.
Don't encourage him. We're having a good committee meeting so far. And
they moved me closer to keep him in line.
Yeah.
The other thing I'd like to say, you mentioned what do you see? Well, I'll say to you what I've said to other committees, and that is this, that, of course, you know that the Oregon Constitution requires you to balance the budget. Sure. But it also, looking at public safety and health of Oregonians, requires you to raise revenues sufficient. Well, frankly put, we don't have people dying. Are more people going crazy on our streets because they don't have the medications necessary? And frankly, that's where it is. And I know you already know that. But I want to say, as far as revenues, that where there can be tax credit loopholes, tax deduction loopholes closed, means more administrative dollars, but to take a closer look at who's paid corporations that are or not paying their income tax, for example, and these loopholes that they're taking advantage of that don't qualify under the legal parameters. Please change that. I know you don't want to look at raising revenues otherwise yet, but I can say, I don't know how many people are saying this to you, but a lot of people are saying to me, they've changed their minds in the last 2 years, to raise sales tax. And I know it probably won't go very far because of there's a lot of people with a lot of clout and a lot of dollars that can fight against that. But a lot of people are saying that we need to do that because we have... it'd be a fairer system, provided that you lower the income tax, personal income tax. So that's some of the thoughts that I've been asked to speak to you about. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
You missed it.
He'll have to listen to the tape.
Yes, he will.
Thank you.
Not that I know a whole lot, but what I
Carolyn, mean. Thank you very much. Like I said before, I mean, that this is the one of the great things that Oregonians have going for them, and the great balancer in this whole process is the committee process.
I just want to say, if any of you know of any means for prescriptions that the pharmaceutical companies cannot give, especially for people below 60, please let me know. I've got people that I'm trying to comfort and encourage, and they're got one man that's got a mental health problem that's caused by chemical imbalance in his body. I was talking with a group of them Sunday at one of the churches, and he's got about 3 weeks left. He's lost his counselor at Cascadia because of this difficulties. And he's working part-time for a Christian construction company that recognizes his problems and let him work a little bit, but it's not enough. And so here's a man who's, and he has some physical problems too, but there's so many, I'm just giving you an example of so many people that's in this situation. So I hope the federal government, which I'm dealing with also in these issues, will release more Medicaid funds to the states, and that we turn this thing around. I just, let me say one other thing, being a minister, and that is that as I look at biblical history and secular history, there's certain principles that God set forth that you take care of your widows, your orphans, and he always blessed the nations that did so economically. And when they begin to turn away from that, then they begin to bring self-destruction upon themselves. Now, it's there in black and white, and look for yourselves, and I really believe that's where we are. So I do pray for all of you all the time. So I wanted to say that too.
Yeah. Reverend Palmer, do you have access to the Internet?
Yes.
Okay, www.needymeds.com. I've got it written down. I'll give it to you.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I
thank you.
Representative Greenlee. I was interested in commenting on what Representative Merkley said before, and it is the intent under line 9 of section 2, page 2 of the bill that talks about covering everything in 414705 to 414750, which in 712 and 750 includes both the categorical and other kinds of population. So I mean, this gives the framework, but in fact it is the framework for both sides. Is that right? I mean, if we get people covered under 750 rather than under 712, they're covered under the same rules, the standard population, or even other populations over 100%. That's shown in 0.750.
But I think what Representative Merkley was referring to is there could be some little anomalies or glitches we would have to incorporate it into the bill, or at least the delivery system, the eligibility standards for certain populations, at least the way we've treated them in the past.
Or even
no guarantee they would be, you know, have the same benefit package or same copays or premiums, whatever, in the future.
Yeah, and I mean, that point is, for example, if we took a standard population without a hospital benefit, we probably would need language in here that would leave room for that sort of thing, because this language probably doesn't, huh?
It depends on what exceptions we make and what types of premiums, copays, you know, if any. I'm not a big fan of either one, so.
Yeah. Anyway, is there anyone else in the room that would like to testify besides Lee Hazelwood and Jeff Hetherington?
Over there.
I'm left.
Laura, come on up. And here's the condition. We're having a public hearing on House Bill 3624.
Oh,
Okay.
I can roll it out.
Hold on. Yeah. Is that going to pull out any further, Jeff?
Let's take this.
Okay. I don't
come
off the stand.
Okay, I can come over there. Okay. My name is Laura Woodruff, and I live in Portland, but I used to live in Cove, if any of you know where that charming little community is, east of La Grande. So I know what it's like to live in a small town and in a major city. I sit on the Multnomah County Disability Services Advisory Council. I'm a member of Project Equality, a member of the Independent Living Resources Board of Directors, and I sit on the Mental Health Association of Oregon. My testimony today is a cry for help. Representative Westland and members of the committee, as everyone in this room ages, our bodies are wearing out, our minds are not as sharp as before, and basically everyone in this room is tired. As a disabled person that uses a mobility device, I need to have assurances that the Oregon Health Plan will continue to pay for mobility devices. By changing the services to cover the same services as covered by Medicare, everyone that uses a mobility device today would not be eligible for a new one when their current one wears out. Medicare rules state that a person must be homebound to be eligible for a mobility device. No one that is currently using a mobility device is homebound. But without a written policy for new equipment, everyone that is currently on OHP will be homebound. What happens to jobs? How does a person get to the grocery store? The doctor? We can probably get into the transportation that would be covered, but getting from the front door of the doctor's office down the hall, up the elevator and down the hall to his office is something else. Being homebound would be much more expensive than a new scooter, and it keeps every one of us independent. Along the same lines, repairs need to be made available to everyone that already owns a mobility device. The same argument will work here. The Oregon Health Plan has been a model system that everyone from the rest of the country is trying to copy. Please remember that cutting off services to any Oregonian is un-Oregon-like. We are leaders. The other 49 states are all followers. Do we want to be number one as a leader, or do we want to become number 50 and be known as the least generous health care system in this great country? All I want to say.
Any questions for Cora?
It's fine.
I'm still going to honor my commitment to you.
Good. When do you want to do it?
Go up and see. I think it should be, hopefully, tending to level out here a little bit.
But you need to, if any of you have missed it, Representative Westland is going to spend a day riding around in a scooter and find out just how hard it is to get around corners, open up doors.
He wants to do it. I mean, he thought he could get a jet plane ride, and he's not going to get that.
Don't give him a nice one like yours, though. We want the most broken down one find.
There is another concern in this. There's a danger to others if we give him one of those.
Well, then they'll have to use their own feet, and then...
And he'll need to wear a helmet.
Thank you.
And, you know, on a serious note, Laura, if we had that discussion, I've thought of specific situations just that I would not have been aware of just as I was walking, or opening this door, just because we had that conversation. So I appreciate you. Is Mike Volpe?
Yeah.
Carolyn?
Maybe if you are going to be, is this only for you? Here, you can sit here and then you can squeal in here. You can sit over there. And we will in here.
Is that probably
what we hear?
I think you have to change different things here. This is our time.
Can you hear me?
You'll have to look.
Yeah, you got to get right into those things.
Okay, can you hear me now?
You're good.
Yeah. Okay, my name is Mike Volpe, and just a couple of comments. I'm legally blind and just found out about this bill yesterday, and I haven't had a chance to read it or have somebody read it to me very well. But one thing that concerns me greatly about this bill is that you're making a rather sweeping change to this bill, to the whole Medicaid population, and it's all going to be made by July 1. And you've already mentioned a number of things that do have to happen, and it's a lot of very fine decisions that need to be made, and a lot of considerations, a lot of special considerations that need to be made. For example, in a number of rural areas, for example, where I live, which is in Corvallis, there's only one capitated health plan, which is the Intercommunity Health Network. Intercommunity Health Network is not accepted by a large portion of the medical providers in that area. And already, since it is a rural area, there are very few medical providers in certain areas, such as neurology, which is what I have, multiple sclerosis. And that, if I'm correct, I think there are four providers in Corvallis, and I know the one that I go to would not take Intercommunity Health Network. I've been told that, and I'm currently on a fee-for-service. And so that is a great concern that I have. And I think this is probably going to be true in a number of rural areas in Oregon. And let's see, one question that I had for you is that under the co-chair's budget, would durable medical equipment and prescriptions be covered for the waivered population?
Well, let me explain this in very technical terms.
Okay.
The co-chairs made a mistake. Durable medical goods will be covered at least for whatever parts of the populations that we can afford to cover. So the answer is yes. It will be covered. If you're in the categorical area, that will be covered.
Okay. And prescriptions?
Prescriptions.
Will they be covered?
Yep.
Okay.
Now, that's for about 350,000 Oregonians. What's at issue here, Mike, is an additional 125,000, 135,000, you know, of the population that's deemed a standard that, at least with current resources, we're not able to provide coverage to. That, I think, is, the population that is covered will have durable medical goods, alcohol and drug services, mental health, and prescriptions, as well as, basic physician and hospital services. I mean, it will be a, very comprehensive benefits package. If it's kind of tough love here. I mean, if you're in, you're in, and you're getting dang good medical coverage. If you're out, you're not getting anything.
And sometimes I wish that some of the concentration that's being put into this effort will be put into looking at raising revenue through trying to take selective tax breaks out of the law, and looking at possibilities of selective taxes that could be imposed. It just seems like there are options other than cuts that might, the Oregonians have been going through cuts for quite a few years now, and I just don't know where this is all going to end. The Oregon long-term care system has been basically cut down over the last, well, I've only been involved in the last three biennium, but never has there been any additions to the people who are receiving long-term care. There have only been cuts. And I'm very concerned about the future of people with disabilities and seniors. And if this keeps on coming, if this keeps on going at this rate, I'm afraid that Oregon is going from having one of the best long-term care systems to having one of the worst long-term care systems in a very short amount of time, and that'd be very sad.
And I think you're exactly correct. I think one of the things that we are still justifiably noted for having an exemplary long-term care system, and that is, as you have correctly stated, that is even that is eroding. But let me put your mind at ease a little bit on how this managed care fee-for-service thing, you know, is really supposed to work. If you live in an area, say down around Corvallis, and you have a managed care plan, the bill indicates that if that managed care organization has the capacity to take a patient, they have to take the patient. Capacity is defined, you know, as being able to find a primary care physician within 21 days. If they can't, and assign that enrollee to a primary care physician that will take him or her within 21 days. If they can't, that patient stays in fee-for-service.
But is that person then assigned to a physician, or does the person get to choose the physician?
Yeah, they get a period to choose the physician.
Okay. So, I mean, to me there's quite a difference between assign and choose.
Yeah, no, that's a collaborative process. They go through the, and I don't know the specific mechanism, but you have the first choice, second choice, third choice type of thing. You know, if the first physician says no, then, you know, okay, what's your second choice? That's how that works.
Okay.
But let's be clear. I mean, you know, I'm not saying this is going to make everybody happy. I mean, I understand that there are individuals out there that will be assigned to a primary care organization that has capacity, and that individual may want to stay in fee-for-service. That's not an option to them.
Mr. Chair.
And the reason is because fee-for-service is more expensive. We can't afford that luxury, if you will. And the reason we do it is to cover more people, is to provide more services to more people. You see where I'm going with that?
What it seems like is happening is that you're taking a certain... Okay, currently the problem that... The health care is being cell-based. I mean, you're just thinning the soup, basically.
Oh, I wouldn't call that thinning the soup at all. I think that individual can still receive some of the best medical care, you know, on the face of the planet.
I guess I would differ with you because I currently receive... My primary care physician would not take Intercommunity Health Network. I know that for a fact. And I know that she is one of the best physicians in Corvallis. And if I had to go to somebody else, then I would have to try to rearrange. I would not get the same kind of service. I have built up a relationship with this person for about 5 to 6 years, and then that would be gone. I would have to start all over again. And so I don't understand how it could be stated that I would not be losing out if something like this happened.
Well, maybe the middle ground is that your physician, whomever... I think you mentioned it as a she, you know, maybe she will find her way, and we have her way, and we have some ideas about this, into the managed care organization. Then you'd be fine.
Then it would be fine. And then I have to work with my neurologist to try to get that person to accept the Intercommunity Health Network. And, I mean, then it just goes on.
And on and on, and there is no perfect solution, and there is no easy answer. And what we're trying to do is take very scarce, precious resources, you know, to cover people that have legitimate medical needs, you know, as much as possible. And I just don't have a good answer for you except this one. We have some ideas about encouraging more physicians to get involved with managed care.
Okay. And I do appreciate you've got a very difficult task. And I may be a little bit demanding, but yes, you've got a very difficult task, but we also have a very difficult task.
Yeah. Did you have something else?
Yes, Mr. Chair, just for a moment. Hi, Mike. I know you can't see me. This is Representative Bates. We've met before in the Senior Task Force on multiple occasions.
And
thank you for coming down today. I know it's hard for you because you tire easily, and I appreciate you coming down. You mentioned something early that I think we need to talk about just for a moment, if we could. You talked about the wavered population. It goes directly to what the chairman was talking about. If we can't find enough efficiencies in the delivery system we have, and those wavered populations won't be covered anymore. And that's where we'll have our real loss. The categoricals, those that we have to cover, we have barely got enough money to cover them for pharmaceuticals and durable medical goods, alcohol and drug dependency, and mental health issues. We found enough efficiencies to pay for that. But we don't have anything right now going on beyond that, and that's where we have to bring the revenue in. I would guess that you're probably on Medicare because I assume you're disabled.
I have Medicare and Medicaid.
So you're.
I have Medicare and Medicaid.
So I would expect that the physicians you're dealing with have also refused to take Medicare as well as Medicaid, and they're using the Medicaid as a supplemental to that.
That is correct.
And we need to encourage those physicians to work with us in order to get them into managed care, so people like you could continue your relationship with your particular physician. I personally feel those people will step up to that if we structure managed care in a proper way. And we're working on changing that structure by bringing more people into it. Our real issue, Mike, as you well know, is raising enough revenue in some way so we do cover the wavered population. And we can't do that unless we first show that we have an efficient way of delivering health care. And that's where we're at right now, is showing we can do it efficiently and then expanding from there for the population that's presently covered, because we don't want to lose that population. I would guess the most important thing you're getting out of Medicaid right now is medications, because Medicare doesn't have that benefit for you.
That's correct. And also then Medicaid picks up the percentage that Medicare does not.
I understand that. We don't want you to lose that. And the work this committee has done is to help prevent that from occurring.
Okay, well, I would appreciate any work that you could do to try to include or try to allow as many physicians to be included as possible.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Merkley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the one of the points that's being made is that healthcare isn't quite like shopping for other things. And I'm going back, Ellen's not here, but she suggested we need to wrestle with when we provide exceptions for people who have longstanding established relationships with medical providers where there's something important that can't be recaptured by shifting plans. And certainly your comment, Mr. Volpe, is that you'd be starting from scratch, that there is something of value in this long relationship, and I think the chair has referred to that we have perhaps ideas about how to help doctors get into plans as one way to solve that problem. Mrs. Lowe has mentioned she'd like the committee to wrestle with the exception process when that's appropriate, and so I have the impression that this is an area that we have some additional
chewing on, that we flexibility to work on this. But you raised very important points, and I appreciate your comments.
And I would be happy to come back and work with you some more on this. Because, you know, I'm very interested in trying to make this work out, because I do realize it's a balancing act, and that there are an awful lot of things that are at risk and a lot of things to be gained, and some are done or another. There has to be a balance worked out between the two, and I appreciate the work that all of you are doing, and anything that I can do to help, I'd be willing to do that.
Thank you very much for that offer.
Mike, we appreciate that.
Thanks for coming.
Yep.
Thank you.
Nice to see you again, Mike.
We have one last witness who I would point out was able to read the instructions very clearly, Carolyn, and mysteriously print her name on the sign-up sheet. Actually, I did it. But I had to double-check the instructions. Is Tina Kitchen with us? Enter and sign in, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Tina Kitchen. I am the medical director for seniors and people with disabilities. And I'm not here really to testify on this bill, but I would just like to make one small correction. People who are on the DHS waivers, the seniors and people with disability waivers, are categorically eligible, and they are not at law. They're not, at this point, at risk of losing their OHP services. And I just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you. Good.
Thank you.
We can end on a bright note. There's one category of population we know is in.
Thank you, Doctor.
You're welcome, Doctor.
We will be continuing with our public testimony format on Monday. Any questions of the committee? Any comments? Concerns? Good of the order? Come to the dais.
And repeat your name so they've got it on the record there. Carolyn.
Okay. Carolyn Palmer from Special Concern. Well, Reverend Carolyn Palmer. Okay. Do you have in some of the meetings that's going on some people, some doctors who have our fee for service only and who may have turned down the Oregon Health Plan before, who you plan to try to approach? And I'd like privately to give a couple of names. But I hope that you make that a big part of your discussion as much as possible. Maybe the gap can be narrowed. Okay. That's
important. Yeah, and make sure you get those probably to Steve.
I will. Okay. Maybe I will to Alan also because...
Yeah,
it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter which one.
You're talking about physicians who had a chance to go into managed care and chose not to, went to fee-for-service?
Well, no, I'm talking about physicians that had accepted the other Oregon Health Plan who have since left the managed care plans because of different problems you probably, as a doctor, already know about.
Yep.
So if they're approached again, maybe in these discussions there can be some different language that will help more fee-for-service physicians overcome those difficulties.
Thanks.
And I'm sorry to disappoint the committee with this, but I cut a very hard and fast deal with one Jacqueline Zimmer that if I allowed her to testify at today's meeting, she would never, never, you know, testify in front of this committee again.
No, I refuse to accept that then. She can't testify today because I'd love to have her come testify more often.
I would take the opposite tack, Mr. Chair.
I would vote on whether
I would accept that
offer.
Yeah,
it's a good deal.
Yeah, I was looking out for the best interest of the committee, not necessarily the best public policy, but the best interest of the committee.
I was looking out for the best public policy. That she is a good voice for.
She claimed in the newspaper that she's worn down, so I think it's okay. We can take
this girl has been injured.
Mr. Chair,
Thank you very much, Jacqueline Zimmer-Jones, for the record. I didn't think I was going to testify today. I actually just had a root canal about an hour ago, so.
We've had one for 3 months.
I don't have my written testimony with me, but I just want to clarify a couple things. And first of all, you know, of course, like everyone, thank you for even tackling this monster of a subject. And, you know, considering the folks that you're thinking about, we very much appreciate it. I just want to clarify something that Dr. Kitchen just said, and that was about the categorically eligible. She was talking about seniors and persons with disabilities remaining eligible. That's true unless we change the income guidelines for eligibility in our programs. If we go to 100% of SSI, then a number of those seniors and people with disabilities will no longer be categorically eligible. And so, therefore, you will find them without the Oregon Health Plan coverage. So I just wanted to just add to what she said, and so I'm clarifying that for you, because you were all cheerful and all, and
you didn't want us to be happy or anything like that.
That, right, to be permanent. It's all got to be temporary happiness here. And then the other thing is I think some of the advocates made good points, and I listened to a little bit of it on the computer as I was working my way over here, and the durable medical equipment piece is somewhat problematic for us, and I think people talk to you about that a little bit. You know, one of the advantages of dealing locally with local contact is that the odds of you finding someone to advocate for you when you need durable medical equipment probably are a little stronger than they are if you're talking to a managed care company that may be seen more as a gatekeeper rather than somebody that's there to, I mean, no offense, but to facilitate as much care as a person needs. So there is a concern about, and we have had this problem in the past, with people not being able to get durable medical equipment like they need in certain services and certain care. So just something for you to keep in mind. I think if you're hearing people say that that's an issue, we can actually bring you information that shows that where that's happened to us before. I know that the department is interested in having them be a source for the exemptions, and I think that's a good idea, except that, again, that's going to another community or city or another part of the state to get someone to give you permission for the exemption that you need to get the service that you need. But, I don't know how you would actually address that, but that's just a concern that some of our folks have. So. How was that? Was I thinking pretty clearly there?
That's not bad for Novocaine. Pretty, a little.
A little bit.
We'd say that's better than normal.
It was also shorter than normal.
Well, and no fit. So, I'm out of fit. So there you go.
And I would like to know how you can have a root canal look like that afterwards. I mean, that's amazing.
It's quite the doctor. Thank
yeah,
you very
that's
much.
A good doctor. Unlike some
we know. I know. I heard that.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Jacqueline, on a serious note, this exceptions process, this flexibility, I think there's an appetite for that on the committee. How we do that, you know, it's kind of not what you do, it's how you do it. So we're going to spend, you know, some time in making sure we get that right. You know, I'm not saying you're going to be happy with it or the department's going to be happy or anyone's going to be happy with it by the time we're done, but I think there needs to be some flexibility within these hard, fast, black and white lines we've got here.
That's terrific. We appreciate hearing that. Very much so. Okay. Thank you.
Appreciate
very
welcome. Very good. Any other discussion? Go to the order. We are adjourned.